from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working with students and families to improve college access and student success for a better West Virginia. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
Good evening. I'm Andrea Lanham for the legislature today. Both the House and Senate passed resolutions to proclaim February 7th as Veterans Visibility Day here at the Capitol. It's also Agriculture and Conservation Day at the Capitol. In a minute, we'll bring you a story where veterans and agriculture intersect in a very effective program. But first, complaints over the Public Employees Insurance Agency were center stage in the House floor session again today. A motion to discharge House Bill 4346, which would repeal the PEIA Finance Board, was voted down.
The language I've seen on the press releases coming out of here over the last 24 hours is we recommend, we ask, we hope that the PEIA Financial Board will listen to us. Same language the governor's using. I recommend, I hope, I pray. That's what our constituents tell us. They request us to act. We should be taking the responsibility.
Later in the program, senior reporter Dave Mistich will join us for a breakdown of House action on PEIA this morning. But as I mentioned, it's Agriculture and Conservation Day at the Capitol. Joining us now is West Virginia's Commissioner of Agriculture, Kent Leonhardt. Commissioner, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So there was lots of activity on the rotunda today. There was a lot of displays and samples. It's always one of the most fun days of the session. But the big message here is we want to start taking this industry seriously. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, absolutely. Thank you so much. You know, today's a great day for the legislators to come through and learn what the Department of Agriculture does, number one. And also it talks about, you know, when we talk about, you know, survival, it's, you know, if you've ever been to a survival school, it's, you know, you find food, shelter, and water. Well, water and food are two of those elements, and that's the Department of Agriculture and Conservation. And it's so very important. You know, they get in the hustle and bustle of PEIA and teachers' raises and all those other things that are at the forefront in the legislature. We seem to forget about the basic necessities of life sometime. And we have to make sure that we're treating agriculture as a business. Because that's what it is. It's a business, it's hard work, and we have to make sure that the legislature understands what it means to be in agriculture today.
So you're focused on several things this session, and we want to talk about the funding request for the Veterans and Warriors to Agriculture program. But first, we wanted to share an excerpt from a story by reporter Roxy Todd that we aired on the program last year. It begins with a veteran from Clay County. His name is Eric Grandin, and we pick up where he is describing how the program has given him purpose.
Using three freshly painted bee boxes as a podium, Army veteran Eric Grandin started off the meeting by telling his story about how the Farmers to Agriculture staff and volunteers helped him find purpose by teaching him to farm.
In the military, you have a battle buddy who's there to take a bullet for you when there's nobody else. These guys are my battle buddies.
Grandin served in the Army for 20 years, and he suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. Before he started farming, he says he had given up hope.
And we're not just going to lay around and feel sorry for ourselves as West Virginians anymore. We're going to pick ourselves up.
He found a mentor in James McCormick, a retired Army veteran himself, who coordinates the state's Veterans to Agriculture program. For Grandin, making that call to James McCormick changed his life.
The thoughts are still there, the memories. But, you know, I've kind of learned to find a new normal in my life.
Besides the therapeutic benefits of farming, veterans like Grandin have benefited economically, too. It's made him wonder, how much food could veterans grow for the state of West Virginia? Keith Buchanan of Wendling's Food Service in Buchanan says his company is interested in buying local peppers, onions, and potatoes from veterans every week of the year. Wendling's distributes food to stores and restaurants across the state.
Hearing the stories from the veterans is inspiring. And I think it's a reason why you would want to do it on top of anything else.
Buchanan says his customers are asking for more local food, but it's difficult to find farmers who can grow enough produce year-round. He says if veterans could be trained to package large quantities of their vegetables and freeze them, that could extend their growing season. His company is building a new packaging center in Buchanan, where veterans and other farmers would be able to bring their produce to be processed, making it easier to sell to schools, prisons, and senior centers.
They buy a lot of the same types of products, and we really think that there's a viable market for things like peppers and onions and things that are main staples on menus.
Selling to schools and other wholesale markets, that's something the West Virginia Department of Agriculture would like to teach to more veterans as part of a new 12-week training course. Unlike a conventional classroom, most of the courses would be taught outside on farms, says James McCormick, coordinator for the Veterans to Agriculture program.
We think that it's important for us to get these folks on the farm to let them understand, you know, what being a farmer really means. In 12 weeks of working actually in the dirt, you're going to realize whether or not you really want to do this or not.
McCormick says the Department of Agriculture is looking at partnering with universities or community colleges for the short-term certificate program. They're working on setting up the training course so veterans could use their education benefits through the federal GI Bill.
Well, I think there's sort of a unique model here that nobody's really explored to the level that the Veterans and Warriors to Agriculture program is specifically looking at.
That's LG Corder, the director of the Office of Veterans Education and Training at the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission. He says a program like this could even attract veterans from areas outside of West Virginia.
So if there's a gap that they can fill that not only active duty military could access, but then veterans when they're leaving the military could transition into, we might be able to provide some real opportunities for student veterans here in West Virginia.
For the Legislature Today, I'm Roxy Todd in Clay County.
We do have an update on this story. The 12-week program actually was readjusted to 6 weeks, and sadly, we need to report that Mr. Grandin's farm experienced a fire last October. But this week, he told us they're getting back on their feet, and he remains very involved and very grateful to the Veterans and Warriors to Agriculture program. Now, Commissioner, I know that you have a bill that's asking for funding for this program. Tell me what you're asking for.
Well, I'm asking for the legislature to fund the program for the first time since its inception for $250,000. I think that's a very little amount to really start to kickstart this. I mean, because we can start working with other programs, federal programs. We've held some stakeholder meetings with the VFW and the institutions of higher learning that you saw mentioned there, trying to bring this all together and attract those out-of-state GI Bill dollars into the state of West Virginia. I'd like to report that I spent some time with Eric on Monday, and was there helping other veterans. He's doing just great, even though he suffered that loss that you mentioned. So he's doing great because of the program, and it was a pleasure to see him on Monday.
Now, the impression that we got is these veterans, they're not getting rich on this program, but you want to develop it in a direction that is more lucrative.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole idea is to give these men and women a hand up to where they can go out on their own. I mean, there's another veteran you saw in the video. He had the bibs and the beard, and he's another one in the program, and he's actually making a living in the bee industry.
So let's talk about agriculture's part in economic diversification. We hear about economic diversification from pretty much everybody. What role does agriculture play in this?
Well, I think it makes it plays a very important role. You know, everybody has to eat. We have a big gap within our state. We import about $6 billion worth of food, even though we only grow about $1 billion. We're having discussions all over the state where people are getting kind of energized, and we're trying to bring those ideas and programs together so everybody's learning from each other so we don't make the same mistakes. We have too few dollars out there. We can't afford to be making mistakes with our taxpayer money. But the idea is to give these veterans a hand up. They end up having their own business, then they're back to contributing. You know, we have record of like Eric's, 8 on tape right now, that the program's helped. And you can't put a price tag on that, but I believe with proper funding, we can sure do a lot more.
You said that we only grow about $1 billion. Is there a reason for why it is that way, or is there just not an interest in it?
Well, it's, you know, things have changed over the years. At one point in time, everybody told me West Virginia's topography challenged. We don't have the flat land to grow the foods like other people do. But with new technologies, such as the high tunnels you saw in that clip, or greenhouses and hydroponics, West Virginia is no longer topography challenged. We're at the cusp of where we can start taking agriculture in West Virginia to a whole new level. You know, I know the governor wants to look out for a single crop that we can place our hat on. You know, our maple syrup production is up 33% this past year. But I believe that West Virginia can have a cornucopia of specialty crops where we can get these high value, value added crops such as shiitake mushrooms, maple syrup. We can go ahead and ship these all over the United States because we're one day's drive from 60% of the population of this country. So we need to look at those niche markets and those niche crops that you can fit in the back of a pickup truck, take to market, and make a living on.
And you have a specific vision and initiative and goals for 2018, and we want to get to those, but first we have to talk about Senate Bill 270, and this allows for limited logging in state parks. Now, I remember previously you had called this initiative poorly thought out and with little foresight. Where is that bill now, and what's your biggest concerns with it?
Well, right now the bill hasn't moved anywhere. I still think it's a bad bill. I still think it's poorly thought out. West Virginia is the third most forested state in the nation. We're number one in hardwoods. Why would we want to mess with 0.5% of the hardwoods there? These are places that families come and they teach their children about the succession in a forest, an old growth forest. If we start logging, we're going to change the complexion. I've had people, after I came out against the bill, and they said they were going to do it where nobody could see it being done, I had people come out and say, I've seen every square foot of every park, more than once. And they talked about forest health. And I've got to correct Director Cook. I don't know where he came up with telling me I need to stay out of the program or the bill because I'm a farmer, but actually I have a whole plant industries division. The Department of Agriculture is responsible for forest health. They kept talking about the bills for forest health, but the Department of Agriculture is the one that's responsible for forest health. In fact, later on this month, my deputy commissioner is going to be speaking about forest health and invasive species issues at the Forestry Association Symposium. We also do the inspections on the logs and timber for export. Since I've been in office, we've been able to accelerate that through just changing the way things are done with the USDA and our producers, and we've been able to accelerate the export of timber. So to say that the Commissioner of Agriculture doesn't have a say in forestry, I think is a little bit misleading.
So let's get started now on the bills that you're following really closely. And one of them is Senate Bill 375, which would give you some flexibility with agriculture funds. What would this allow you to do?
Well, you know, the Department of Agriculture is not funded fully out of general revenue. We get fees, we get grants, and things of that nature. But the way the financial structure in our state government is, they're within set line items. And in one year, I might be short in one fund and I can't do what I need to do and I might be flush somewhere else. I need to be able to move those funds back and forth a little bit just to make sure, and within reason. I'd be glad to be open with the legislature. It'll all be on OASIS. It'll all be transparent, but I just need to have that flexibility so I can manage the state's funds properly.
And Senate Bill 317 addresses what you believe are burdens on producers and agribusinesses. Can you kind of talk about that bill?
Which one is that one again?
One is Senate Bill 317.
Give me the title on that one.
It's on burdens on producers and agribusinesses.
Oh, that must be the one where we're working with DHHR on?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes, okay. Right now, DHHR regulates fluid milk and milk products, and the Department of Agriculture regulates the ice cream machines and things of that nature. So there's a lot of confusion throughout the state, I think, by having that bill passed. But I think we're going to throw that into a study resolution and come up with a good bill for the next year.
So let's go through your list of initiatives and goals that you have for 2018. The first step is to conduct an economic impact study to develop a strategic plan for agriculture. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Right there within state code is the Agriculture Advisory Board, which consists of the governor, myself, and the dean of WVU Extension. When I first got into office, we checked to see if that board was meeting, and nobody could remember it meeting. So we reactivated, and one of the first tasks that we gave ourselves was to set up a steering committee to go out and study agriculture in West Virginia. You know, where do we need to do? Where can we improve? How can we make things better? What type of crops can we grow in West Virginia? Who are the players in agribusinesses? Because it's more than just farming. It's education. It's the suppliers. It's the producers. It's the trucking. So we decided to do a study, and we're talking about that right now. We found the contractor to do it. We're doing it on a very economical scale. We're going to be able to come back with a good five-year plan on where we should take agriculture in West Virginia.
So another one is to push forth a local food campaign. What will that campaign entail?
Well, that'll be included in the strategic plan, obviously, but we're still working on that as well. You know, we've noticed throughout in our schools and things of that nature, you know, West Virginia has a poor diet. You know, we have a lot of obesity, we have, you know, blood pressure issues, and a lot of this starts in the schools because we're using the processed foods. So if we can get our children to eat healthier at a younger age, they're used to eating healthier at later in life. I think we fell short many years ago because one part of government said we can save money in our schools and our prisons and things of that nature by going to heat and serve and not having as many cooks and not having to prepare the fresh foods. Now, fast forward 20 years later, our budget is in a crisis because more of healthcare than anything else. So maybe the few cents we saved over the years didn't really save us any money in the long run. So this is where we need to start reversing the trend and getting that local foods. Not only is it good for the local economy, but it's also good for the health of our citizens.
And you're also pursuing a rebranding of the Department of Agriculture. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, of course. I mean, we're doing things like having a West Virginia grown logo so people can identify and be proud of the work that they're doing in agriculture. We also recently signed a Veterans Coalition agreement to where we can do Homegrown by Heroes label on our food. We just want to make sure we're proud West Virginians, we're proud of what we do in agriculture, and we want to make sure everybody else knows that we can do it.
And you're also celebrating the start of maple syrup season. How large of a market is there for West Virginia maple syrup?
It's growing every day, or every year, I should say. We're in about, since the association started, about 3 or 4 years, they've been growing leaps and bounds. Like I said, 33% increase last year. We got to tap a tree outside the governor's office today, and the sap was flowing. It was perfect weather for tree tapping. I think the upside potential is huge. And if you listen to Rich Flanagan, the head of the maple syrup producers, he says, I'll pit West Virginia maple syrup against anybody's.
Well, Commissioner of Agriculture Kent Leonhardt, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Addressing the anger and frustration of teachers and public employees over upcoming increases in their health insurance costs, the majority leader of the House of Delegates introduced House Resolution 5 this morning. This non-binding measure asked the PEIA Finance Board to table its plan for 2019 and return to the current year's plan while changes it has proposed for the upcoming year can be studied.
I think it's important to act, certainly not delay, and act today. And if this is the will of the House, we should say it, put it on record, and share it with the people of West Virginia. There are some good things in this resolution. The plan, it differs extensively from the plan that we had last year. There are major differences, increases in premiums for some, increases in co-payments and co-insurance, and for the first time, the use of total family income. And the resolution just asks that we give time to study that, look at those things closer, and recognize the goals of the Finance Board when they made that choice. But it says, maintaining the provisions of the current financial plan during the upcoming year While further consideration is given to developing a fairer plan, it is in the best interest of the plan members and the state of West Virginia. I think we, the House of Delegates, should make that statement and share it with our people across the state.
Joining us now is senior reporter Dave Mistich. Dave, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about this resolution. I know you were over in the House and you had heard some of the debate that had happened.
Right. I mean, there wasn't that much debate as much as there was just conversation around PEIA. Honestly, this resolution is just a request to the PEIA Financial Board. It does nothing by law. A lot of Democratic delegates asked of Coles and House Finance Chair Eric Nelson various questions. It's pretty par for the course for the opposing party to ask questions like that. A lot of times they already know the answers to it, but it's sort of just a political maneuver to get them to answer questions that everyone in the room already knows. But there were some questions there that were asked. A few delegates got up and spoke about that resolution and larger issues at play, one of whom was Delegate Mike Pushkin of Kanawha County here, and here's what he had to say about that.
I just wanted to point out, as somebody who used to be on PEIA, I'm not currently on it, but as someone who has dealt with it, it's not such a great system right now. What we're freezing right now has a lot of problems. Until we actually do the heavy lifting and fully fund the program and actually fix the program, that's what we should be doing right now. You know, making statements is all well and good, but I would prefer doing the real work and actually funding the program. I will vote for this, but we're just making a statement. But what I've always heard is, you know, when it's all said and done, a whole lot more gets said than ever gets done. So I'm for walking the walk and not just talking the talk. So yeah, this is fine, but let's actually do it. Let's fully fund it. Let's fully fund it.
And there was one delegate who voted no on this resolution.
That's right. There were, you know, the majority of the House, everyone but one, voted in support of the resolution. There were some conversations about adding people to, as co-sponsors. House Minority Leader Tim Miley had motioned to have some of the Democrats who were not initially included as co-sponsors of the resolution come up and add their names. There was this funny moment where a lot of Dems walked up to the clerk's desk there at the front of the House to do that, and then they realized how many people were going to come up. As it turns out, they changed that the initial co-sponsors to whoever voted in the affirmative on the resolution wound up as co-sponsors. Again, there was only one, and that was Delegate Mick Bates.
We've been dealing with this issue for 3 years now, so that resolution is meaningless, all right? It means nothing. I don't want to give the impression to people back home that it does mean something. So all it does is say, we would like them not to do anything, and we would like them not to do anything until this next election, all right? That's all that's about, all right? And that's not what I'm here to do. So we're here to fix this problem. We need to own the problem. We need to fully fund it, all right? We need to make sure that this insurance is viable. This is not a new issue, all right? We've been here 30 days. We've been here 30 days, and we passed a resolution on this issue. We've done a lot of other things, but all we've done, as far as PEA is concerned, is pass a resolution. And to me, that's unacceptable.
And we've also seen Delegate Spinagle stand up day after day.
Right, and he actually motioned to discharge a bill of his, House Bill 4346, to the floor and you know, get it out of committee. It was actually been in gov.org since it's been introduced. And, you know, of course, that discharge motion was tabled. And, you know, that bill basically would repeal the PEIA Finance Board. As you're hearing from Democrats right now, they want to see action on this. This is one way that they're trying to get to that, is to get rid of the PEIA Finance Board and then basically put all of the responsibility back in the hands of the legislature. So after that bill was tabled, Spinagle again motioned to remove it from being tabled and then get it back on the floor. That motion failed as well. So nothing really, nothing going as far as that bill, and I think we're likely to see a lot of that with the Republicans having such a majority over there in the House. But the Democrats, they do want action, and this resolution for them has not been enough. So, and we've heard that a lot today. So,
So what do you think is going to happen the next couple of days with this?
I think you're probably going to see more of the same. Honestly, the Democrats seem to not be letting up on this. And, you know, with what you heard from Delegate Bates, I think is a little bit more of a fired up version of what all the Democrats are thinking right now. Again, him voting no on that was symbolic, saying that this is not enough. I think that we're bound to see a lot more conversation. It's been going on all session. As various people have pointed out, this has been going on for like three or four sessions in a row. So with all that being said, I think it's not going away anytime soon at all. So,
senior reporter Dave Mistich, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
This concludes the Legislature Today. Join us tomorrow on day 30 of the 60-day session. We'll be joined by the Secretary of the Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety, Jeff Sandy. I'm Andrea Lanham for West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us and have a great evening.